there's no one better to bring us into the atmosphere of Yom Yerushalayim. Someone who lives and breathes Yerushalayim. Someone who has college called College of Jerusalem, if I'm not mistaken.
Jerusalem College.
Someone who's a rabbi for many years in Yerushalayim, or in the neighborhood of Yerushalayim, where I live in Har Nof. And without further ado, Rav Goldstein.
Yom Yerushalayim, I think of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is my hero. A number of years ago, I was living in the Galil, and along came Lag Bomer, and tens, hundreds of thousands of people were on their way northward to Miron, which was just about 15, 20 minutes from where I was living. And I told my wife, I am not going to Miron, I am going southward to Tveria, 7 minutes away. Let the whole world go to the cave of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. I'm going to go to the cave of Rav Shimon ben Yochai's Rebbe. So I make my way through to Tveria till I found the cave of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, I got to the cave. I didn't say Tehillim, no Tfilas, nothing whatsoever, but of course, Hashgacha Pratis, there was a Tanakh. Somebody, here we are, Navi maybe, left the Tanakh right near the cave of Rav Shimon, of Rabbi Akiva. Keep me on the straight path, Rabbi Akiva. I open up to Zechariah, Perek 8. Because the perspective with which we have to look at Yom Yerushalayim, and it is awesome, I just want to give you that perspective. Was it 1800 years ago that Rabbi Akiva and Chachmei Yisrael are standing on Haratzofim, the other side of the mountain? They're looking down on Harabayit, and they see a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKodashim, the famous Gemara at the end of Masechta Markus. They cry, he smiles, the conversation that ensues. Well, why are you crying? Rabbi Akiva asks them. They say, what do you mean? Take a look, the place where only the Kohen Gadol would go on Yom Kippur, now it's ruins, it's destroyed, foxes are walking on the Temple Mount. And Rabbi Akiva's great response was, that's exactly why I'm smiling. Because if the prophecy of the Churban has been fulfilled so precisely, then I believe with perfect faith that the prophecy of Nechama of consolation will also be fulfilled precisely. And he told them the pasuk in Zechariah, Od Yeshu Zakenim Uzakenot, the elderly men and women are going to sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. The city is going to be teeming with a mass of humanity. Yeladim v'yeladot misachakim v'rechovotah. Children, boys, girls are going to be playing in the streets. The city is going to come alive. And Chachmei Yisrael said to Rabbi Akiva, Nichamtanu Akiva, Nichamtanu, you consoled us. Did it ever occur to you that you can look out of the window and after 1800 years see the fulfillment of that prophecy every day? I don't need any proofs that Moshe is emes, Tohosa emes. I look at the streets of Yerushalayim and I see it. Coming here now, I tell you, I thought there were only Yeladim v'Yeladot. What's going on out there? Just to get through the old city to get here, it's unbelievable. It wasn't that way. About 1,000 years after Rabbi Akiva, the Ramban arrived in Yerushalayim in 1267. In 1267, the Ramban arrived here and he found the grand total of two Jews living in Yerushalayim. Two! You hear? And these two were not permanent residents. They were given permission to stay for a while in Yerushalayim. Fast forward 200 years later, 1492, Rabbi Ovadia Misfarnum, Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura arrives in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is becoming a thriving metropolis. There are 200 to 300 people in the streets of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid comes in 1700. There are 3,000 to 4,000. Hey, the city is getting jammed. Gold, me, I arrive in 1955. There are 146,000 Jews in this city. But it's a city that's split down the middle. Can you, you'll never be able to imagine this? You'll never be able to imagine this. You know the Mamilla Mall? All right, tell me the truth. How many of you know the Mamilla Mall? You've been at, all right, everybody, get your hands up. Okay, well, you know the Mamilla Mall. You know what the Mamilla Mall was when I came here to learn in Yeshiva in 1955? It was an ugly wall made out of cement with barbed wire going across the top. The city was cut in half. You didn't go to Manila because there were Jordanian soldiers that took pot shots at people from there. That was the city in 1955, 1956, until 1967. Unbelievable. You know what you're seeing over here? You have to know what was. You have to know what was in order to appreciate. I hope that anybody who spends a year learning in Yerushalayim and doesn't once feel the excitement of the kiyum, the fulfillment of the words of the Navi. You have to look at the city like Rabbi Akiva looks at it. One of my dreams, I have a lot of them, but one of my real dreams is to be able to take Rabbi Akiva by the hand through the streets of Yerushalayim. I once had a daydream that I met him near the entrance to the city, you know, by that big, what do they call it, the Gesher HaMeitarim, anybody know the English name, what's it? Anyone know what I'm talking about, you know, that big thing going up in the air over there? Nobody knows anything. What is it, you guys? They're learning so well, they don't know what's going on. I bump into Rabbi Akiva. He's walking around like he doesn't know where he is. He's looking around. I say, Shalom Aleichem, Ayid, where are you from? Not important where I'm from. Who are you? He tells me he's Akiva ben Yosef. Akiva ben Yosef, I should begin to tremble. Rabbi Akiva. Yeah, that's what some people called me. And he asks me, where's the closest Roman garrison? Where are the barracks of the 10th Legion? 10th Legion, Rabbi Akiva, there ain't no Roman. There's no Roman anymore? What are you talking about? Who are the Balabatim here? Who are all these people? I told Rabbi Akiva, there's a Yiddish Medina over here. He couldn't believe it. Rabbi Akiva began to sing and dance for joy. When I came to Rabbi Akiva's caver up there in Tveria, I took out a Tanakh and I read chapter 8 in Zechariah. You gotta read it. It's an unbelievable chapter where the Navi describes a Yerushalayim teeming and bustling with humanity. Traffic jams in Yerushalayim. Traffic jam. I was here also in 80, 81. And you can't imagine this. You will not believe it. I had a car. And I see a fellow walking along King George. You know what King George is? Come on, admit it. You know where King George is. It was King George right around
right around Ben Yehuda. Ben Yehuda, you don't know of. You've never heard of Ben Yehuda. Anyway, I see an old friend with a guitar. You guessed it. Shlema Kalva. Brother, he needs a ride someplace. You understand? So I stop my car on King George. And he opens up the back. First of all, he has to get his big guitar schlepping in over there. By the way, nobody's coming. Nobody's honking me. I can sit there parked all I want on King George. You try that now? 10 seconds you stop on King George, you're finished. The city is awesome. There are 500,000 Jews in the city. Not the two of the days of Ramadan. This is all Kiyum Divrei HaNeviim. And this is something that has to excite you. So that's what I did. I stood there, Bari Akiva's Kever, and I read the Perek. The Perek says, Ki Palei Be'einechem. Reveshem says, it will be a wonder in your eyes. In my eyes it will also be a wonder. Yerushalayim coming to life. After 1900 years of Churban. Unbelievable what's going on over here. But you have to have the perspective. And I told Rabbi Akiva, you should know, if I'd have a can of spray paint, I'd go through this country and I would spray paint the walls. Rabbi Akiva Sodak. Rabbi Akiva was right. Exactly what he told Chachmei Yisrael 1900 years ago as they looked down over here. Why was Rabbi Akiva right? He had the ability to see with that awesome prophetic vision of his. Not everybody sees. It's a big skill to be able to see. One of my greatest stories of the conquest of Yerushalayim, 1967. Tomorrow morning, Yom Yerushalayim. Israeli forces break into the old city. 19-year-olds. They'd never been at the Kotel. They'd never been at Karabayit. For 19 years, you couldn't get into the city. It was held by Jordan. And they broke all the promises that they made about permitting Jews to go to the Kotel. 19 years, Klal Yisrael was separated. Kotel was torn away. Israeli paratroopers are rushing through the city, going from one simtah to the next simtah, and they're finally making their way somewhere in the direction of the Kotel. And as they're running through the streets, it could have been right over here. This was all built up area. There were houses here all the way to the Kotel. They see a young man in the doorway. He's frightened. He's terrified. And they approach him and they say, we're not going to hurt you. Just tell us, how do we get to the Kotel and to Har HaBayit? And this frightened young man stands there and he points the way for them. And there they go. Israeli paratroopers, they make their way to the Kotel. He's standing there transfixed to the spot and he sees them making their way up to the Har HaBayit. And he's there and he watches the Israeli flag going up over Har HaBayit. And the great message, Har HaBayit B'yadeinu, Har HaBayit B'yadeinu. This story appears in Abraham Rabinovich's classic history of the battle for Yerushalayim. The end is what's important. Who was this young man? Says this young man's name was Mahmud Daoud Schleifer. He was a New York-born Jew by the name of Mark David Schleifer. It was probably by his bris they called him Mordechai Dovid. Mordechai David became Mark David. Mark David became Muhammad Dawud. Okay? Had converted to Islam, a New York born Jew, converted to Islam, married a Jordanian girl, was working for a newspaper, and was stationed in the old city of Jerusalem. The last sentence. What a strange witness to the greatest moment in all of Jewish history. Mark David Schleifer is watching the Israeli flag going up on Har HaBayit. It means nothing to him. He doesn't understand. There's nothing in him to give him the ability to understand how historic this is. Throughout the whole world, Jews are going to hear this, they're going to get choked up and they're going to cry. But Mark David Schleifer, he's so distant. He can't understand nor appreciate it. For me, the most tragic part of the story is you don't have to be a New York born Jew who converted to Islam to be as miserably blind as Mark David Schleifer. I have met a lot of Jews and religious Jews and Talmidei Chachamim that, just for heaven's sake, don't get it. Breaks my heart. They're going to shuffle around tonight and tomorrow like they lost their best friend, you understand? The day means nothing. Nothing. Awesome. One of the greatest days in Jewish history. Don't mean a thing. They don't get it. That's a tragedy. That's a tragedy. We are living in the most unusual times in all of Jewish history, or for that matter, in the history of any other people on the face of this earth. To live through it and not to understand and not to appreciate and not to be thrilled by it is a profound tragedy. I have it every day. I have it every day. 2 days ago in the Jerusalem Post, you better learn this, you're going to get a lot of information over here, you know. Anybody know who H.E. Gao Jinping is? Not a soul knows who H.E. Gao Jinping is. You're all a bunch of amaratzim. It's unbelievable. He's the Chinese ambassador to Israel. And he wrote an article in the Jerusalem Post on Sunday. You know that our prime minister is now visiting China. It's unbelievable the way he writes. There was never any anti-Semitism in China. We're the only place in the world where Jews were able to flee during the Second World War, to Shanghai. He's breaking his arm, patting himself on the back. How wonderful China was to the Jewish people. So right, it took them 30, 40 years till they recognized the state of Israel, the Geisa Chachom and the Chinese. But what's awesome about it all, China is most probably the most powerful economic power in the world. And he's saying, we know that Israel is the smallest country on the face of this earth, but it is an economic and scientific power in this world. Can you imagine that? 65 years ago, we were the dust of the ash of the world. 65 years ago, the world assumed that the curtain is finally coming down on Jewish history. And from the ashes, what has developed over here, the strength, the might, the power, it's all Yad Hashem Hashgacha Pratis of the highest order. And you have to be aware of it. I'm going to give you some homework. I googled Israel agriculture. Israel agriculture. Alright? Oh, a lot of stuff comes through. I think the second or third one was Wikipedia. 2.5 pages. Small print, but you're all capable of reading it and understanding it. It's a story second to none. I learned here in Yeshiva in, I said in 1955. You know what we had in this country in 1955? There was still rationing of food. I was learning in Panovich at the time. For a while I learned in Chevron also, but I remember learning in Panovich. That's when I really learned to appreciate this country. We had tomatoes, cucumbers, and avatiyah. That was it. The first apples came onto the market in 1955. No self-respecting New Yorker would even call that an apple. But boy, do we have it now. Best apples in the world. In December of, I'm jumping around a little bit, you'll just have to hold up, you understand? From Panovich, I'm jumping right now to an air floodplain out of Moscow in December of 1983. You got the years straight over here. I was one of the heroes who went to Russia, not in the days when anybody can get onto a plane to go to Russia. Only the strong, the hardy, the courageous were able to go to Russia then. And I was one of those. When they caught me, the moment I came into the country, I was the biggest schlepper of an agent for the Israeli government. They raked me over the coals. But okay, that's for my memoirs. Then you'll read all of my heroism. That's not important. But anyway, we spent 2 weeks in this country. Israel, by the way, since the Six-Day War, the government of the State of Israel sent 2 Jews to Russia every month. We maintained contact for the Israeli government. It's a story someday to be told. So here it is. We're in Russia, and it's the last morning. We're leaving from Moscow to on air flood to Frankfurt, and we gave all the food we had. We gave it to Jews in Moscow. We were very hungry. There was nothing we could eat on the plane, but then I saw they're giving dessert. From the distance, it looked like fruit. It's a fruit. It's an apple. Comes closer and closer. I take a look at those Fashlugana apples. The Israeli apple in 1955 was a delicacy compared to that apple. I remember saying to my partner, Rav Malik Galinsky, Olav HaShalom, for many years been the administrator of Shalvim, I said to him, a major world power that can't produce a decent apple doesn't have long for this world. A few years later, Soviet Union collapsed. So here it is. Wait a minute. I was at Google. If you watch, you can see. I remember everything. I was at Google. I'm Panovich. So we have tomatoes. 2-3 days after we're in Panovich, one of the elder Rebbechim sits down with me at the dining room table, and he puts his arm around me, and he says, "Tam v'kai." You're an American, you don't know what a tomato is. You have somebody bring over a plate with a tomato. Sharp knife. Fork. He gives a dramatic surgical cut. There are two pieces. The tomato's cut smack in half. And he starts describing to me, these are the bones, these are the veins, this is the butter of the tomato. And I'm looking at him, this guy's describing a steak at Kosher Delight, but they didn't have steaks. This tomato was what they were living on. I walk into my local fruit and vegetable store. I'm overwhelmed anew every time. Anything you want in this world, you have it right here. I don't know what the stores are in America. Oh, I hear pomegranate. That's supposed to be mashu. Well, it's not as very good to be a pomegranate. It's okay, I can do without it.
Okay.
So you'll read the, you'll read Wikipedia, and you're going to find out that Israel in the last 50 years has become literally a global agricultural power. A global agricultural power. And you Americans, when I came to one part of that Wikipedia, you gotta get it, you just gotta get those three pages out. I came to one part, I gave a yell to my wife, Bella, come here, come here. What was it? Do you know that Israeli cows produce more milk than any other cows in the world? Elsie, move aside. And they specifically point out that Israeli cows, you understand, outstrip American cows, and European Union cows, and Japan's cows, and Australia. The only cows in the world that are milked three times a day are Israeli cows. This is not Yav Hashem. I said to my wife, that's a pshat, Eretz Zavas Cholov. Udavash. Then when you come to fruits, you find out. If I said this a few weeks ago, people started sending me all sorts of information. You understand? So it turns out that Israel right now is in the process of producing the biggest date in the world. A 10 centimeter date. You know, you Americans, you can just... I don't know, whatever you have over there that you think is good, forget about it. You know what this is? This is all Yad Hashem. This is all Nisim, Gluyim, Gedolim, Mufusamim. You'll find out when you read that only 20% of the land of Eretz Yisrael is land that you can plant on. Only 20%! And Israel is one of the few countries in the world that produces 95% of its own food. It hasn't done that for 1900 years. So you can walk around over here and not realize how the Rebbeinu Shalom is working overtime. The Rebbeinu Shalom is pouring out his blessing constantly to this country. The Shari Tshuva L'Chabeinu Yona in Shar Shlishi Yud Zayin says that one of the mitzvahs of Torah is to remember Chasdei Hashem u'lehitbonein v'hem. It's a mitzvah to remember. We're being mekayim the mitzvah of remembering Chasdei Hashem and thinking about them, pondering about it. If you don't read about it, if you don't know about it, you don't know what the Chasdei Hashem are. Everybody comes up with one great line in his lifetime. I came up with mine about 25 years ago. I said, if you want to talk to God, you go to the Kotel. If you want to see him, you go to Shuk Machne Yehuda. I remember some real religious fellow from Harnof bumped into me in a supermarket. We happened to be in the fruit and vegetable section. And something had happened that day, but there's always something that happens. Rabbi Gold, you're still a big Zionist, Rabbi Gold. So I told him, you ingrate, you should be ashamed of the tomatoes over there. He didn't know what the heck I was talking about. That's okay, but I think he's still standing there now for the last few years. Look at him. He didn't get it. Because there are, unfortunately, a lot of Mark David Schleifers around. And they can be Mark David Schleifers who are big Talmidei Chachamim, and they are very frum. But if they don't get what the Rebbeinu Shalom is doing over here, they are blind. Unbelievable somebody called me a few weeks ago, you know, I'm not only going to send you to Wikipedia.
Michtov me Eliyahu. Rav Tesla. Chelek Shlishi.
Around pages 350, 351, 352. I'm going to read one paragraph to you. Just one paragraph to give you perspective. That's all we're going to do over here. We're going to give you perspective.
This is something that was written by Rav Tesla.
I come prepared, you know. It was written on September 23rd, 1948. 4 months after the establishment of the State of Israel. 4 months after the establishment of the State of Israel. And he writes the following. By the way, everything he writes before, a few pages, it took me hours to go through that. So I'll just give you one. Mashon Borachov. Be'eretz HaKadosha. What's happening now? 48. 4 months after the establishment of the state. It's in the middle of a bitter war of independence. Bitter. Was not sure that they would win the war then. 7 armies came in to crush the newborn child. So he says, at this particular moment, it's difficult to define it as a schalt of the gula. Aval al koponim. Certainly, chasadim gedolim min akotze al akotze. Great kindness of the Bavarian, from one extreme to the other extreme. Miksei hayisunin shel churban. From the yisurim of churban, says of 6 million Jews who were killed. El kitzei hasheni, to the complete opposite end. Listen to these 5-6 words. Hityashvut. Amenu b'medinato be'eretz hakadosha. Our people living in his own medina, wasn't a dirty word to Rav Tesla, be'eretz hakadosha, from one end of the spectrum to the other, from Auschwitz to Hakamas HaMedina. From this you have to learn to establish that belief and that faith in your heart. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what Rav Tesla would have said? Can you imagine what Rav Tesla would have said if he would see what has happened in this country in the last 65 years? Unbelievable! Unbelievable. Now listen to this. Listen to this last sentence. He was thinking of Mark David Schleifer. Oy le mi she yavo li yom hadin va'adayin sumahu milidos dova muhashi kazeh. Woe to the one who stands before the Rabbein Shem on the Yom Hadin and he's still blind from realizing something that is so real as what's happening now, 4 months after the establishment of the State of Israel. What would he say if he would find out a few years later that this weak people have become a world military power? He'd be dancing for joy. Dancing for joy. Not shuffling around on a Yom HaTzmut and a Yom Yerushalayim like he lost his best friend and they think they're from. And if you say Hallel with a bracha, Mizruchinik, what the heck are they talking about? Give me a break. Give me a break. You know what? Tonight, I'm going to be from here. I'm going to my shul in Har Nof. There's a Har Nof Yom Yerushalayim celebration tonight. It's my shul because I built the shul, but I don't serve as rabbi anymore. I daven there. I live right near the shul, but thank God I have a wonderful, wonderful Rav Moshe Leventhal who has replaced me, and I'm so happy that somebody replaced me. It's time for me to get to know my grandchildren. They get to know me. You know, Saba was too busy for to have time for his grandchildren. All right. So I'm gonna tell a story there tonight that I never said publicly before. You understand? I reached a stage, or better said, an age, I don't care anymore. Not only that, I had an unusual experience yesterday. I went to there's a supermarket on Campagne Sharon called Super Sal Deal. And I have a credit card there, you know. Nice store. It's not like Rami Levy, which is just a little bit up the block. It certainly doesn't come to Osher Ad, which is a block away, but you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you understand? Your whole life is life of terror. You know what's going on outside here, all right? So anyway, I bought something, and I'm checking out, and, you know, they ring it up, and the coupon, what do you call the checkout counter girl? The cashier. I forgot it. 32 years I'm here. I can't remember all my English anymore. The cashier says to me, "Happy birthday." What? How do you know? So she tells me to look at the, you know, the screen where they have everything that you purchased. At the bottom of the purchase it says, "Mazel Tov, Yom Huledet Sameach." So, of course, everybody in line. The whole place starts saying, "Happy birthday." And then I get my printout. I get the printout, and at the bottom of the printout it says, "Mazel Tov, Yom Huledet Sameach." And said, "I'm going to put that away. I have it in my Rambam right now. I'm going to put it away. I'm going to collect them for the next 25, 30 years. You understand? Yom Huledet. I made it in this country. It took me 32 years here. My store knows that I'm my birthday." So where were we? So there's something I'm going to tell them. I'm going to tell them in shul tonight, so you're going to hear before shul. Don't, if you bump into anybody from Harnof, don't say anything for the next hour. In 1969, I came with my wife in July. We came for a visit to Eretz Yisrael. I had wanted to come from the moment the Six-Day War was over. I wanted so badly to come, but you know, we had little kids. It's not easy. You can't just pick up and go. Finally it comes, we're going. For me, it was already returning to Eretz Yisrael after having been here in 55 and 56. Here I am. I got two stories. All right, let's just, you know, it's just between us. I had the big schuss in 1959. This sounds to you like the Middle Ages, right? I know, the Middle Ages. In 1959, the Rosh Yeshiva of Neri Yisrael, Reb Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, called me, sent a message. He wants me to come to the office, to his office. Of course, I put my jacket on, and of course I always wondered, what did I do now? Somehow or other I used to get into trouble. I was never guilty. It was the other guy. He started up. But anyway, here it is. I'm on my way to Rosh Yeshiva's office. I come into Rosh Yeshiva's office, and of course I try to look contrite and repentant, and he makes it worse, and he says, "I want you to come to my house tonight." Oh God, I'm going to have to wait till tonight to find out what he wants from my life. Anyway, the day goes by, I come to his house that night, and I'm going to make a very, very long story short. And he asks me, "We're starting the yeshiva in Toronto. Will you go to Toronto to start the yeshiva?" You mean I didn't get caught doing something wrong? I didn't say that to him. Anyway, said yes. So anyway, I went to Toronto. I came as a bacher to Toronto in May of 1959. I was able to build a Yeshivas Neri Yisrael of Toronto. I served there for about 11, 12 years. I also became chaver of a shul in Toronto. But anyway, here it is. It's 1968. 1 year after the liberation of Yerushalayim. And we're sitting at the dining room table. The the whole staff, the chamim, the rabbeim, you know, and me. So I said at lunchtime, I said, you know, today's Yom Yerushalayim. Let's get the whole yeshiva to sing and dance lechvodash Yerushalayim. They looked at me like I had descended from some other planet, someplace. This guy's from Mars. Anyway, then begins the longest. First, the no, and then, well, we don't make our own Yom Tovim. Which God told you to do it? I mean, what are we to do something like this? They're krechzing and they're kvetching until somebody at the end of the table says, Sfira. All of a sudden, all along the table, Sfira. Sfira. So, of course, I could have said, I don't understand, you're allowed to sing and dance in Sfira. What does that have to do with anything? But nothing is going to help. I see where these guys are coming from. So you imagine, I was very sad. I was very sad because I thought, you know, a whole lifetime will go by and these guys, you know, will get away with this tipshus. But you know what I forgot? I forgot that there's a Rabbeinu Shleilim in the world, and the Rabbeinu Shleilim has a sense of humor. Wow! The word Sfira is just disappearing, and I'm sitting there, and we hear noise coming from the entrance to the dining room. I look toward the entrance to the dining room. I have one of the elder bachrim is coming in. There were about 150 bachrim in the yeshiva then. One of them is coming in. I don't know if the ugly minig of yesteryear still takes place. A fellow became a chosin. He'd come and give out cigarettes. That doesn't happen anymore. That was the minig in the outer Zeit, you know, in the old home. Anyway, here's this Elder Bach, he's giving out cigarettes. All of a sudden, the whole yeshiva begins to burst into song and dance. I'm sitting by the table. The whole table jumps up. Oh, and are they dancing around over there? In the entire dining room, only one fella is sitting in his seat. Lo kam v'lo zod, doesn't move. I waited till the dancing ended and the big heroes came back to the table and they're wiping the sweat off their brow and they all sit down and I look at them and I say one word. What did I say? Sfira. You ever seen 12, 13 heads go down like this? They couldn't look me in the face. This happened seconds. And you know what? The Rebbeinu's sense of humor is, what in heaven's name do you think they were singing? They didn't want to sing Mechvodo Shel Yerushalayim in the Rebbeinu. Gave it to them. So right after benching, that was before Mincha was going to come, before Mincha, I go over to a number of the Elder Rav, and I tell them, listen, fellas, as long as the yeshiva sings and dances L'chavod HaShem Yerushalayim, nobody has to go to class. Everybody is free. After Mincha, my whole staff over there didn't know what was happening. The whole yeshiva goes out onto the lawn. It was a beautiful day. For an hour and a half, they sang and they danced L'chavoda Shel Yerushalayim. That was Mark David Schleifer sitting over there by the table. But then the real story. In 1969, I'm coming to Eretz Yisrael, and I get to know a Rosh Hashiva. On the plane, he's also on the way to Eretz Yisrael. And I had understood he had a reputation as a very, very big Talmud Chacham. And he was not a Rosh Shiva in a Rosh Shiva in some kind of a fully woomy place. Who's a Rosh Yeshiva? Why you? How do you like that? We get to talking. I can't believe it. The guy sounds like a sucker. Yom Atzmaut? Useless! Finished! So I tried at least. What about Yom Yerushalayim? That's not political. 3 million Jews were in grave danger. The whole Jewish world was terrified of what was going to happen here. Anybody who doesn't know what May of 1967 was can't understand June. Eretz Yisrael was cut off from the rest of the world. All planes stopped flying. Boats can't get through. This strangling Eretz Yisrael. We thought that this is it. Chas v'sholem churban bayit shlishi. And then comes the Yeshua. Oh God, I'm going to have to speak a few minutes about the Yeshua. I'm talking to this big Rosh Shiva, big Talmud Chacham. I think his middle name was Mark David. All right, and nothing. I don't mean a thing. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take a chance. There's a Jew that I know in Yerushalayim. Remember the years over here. 1969. There's a Jew I know in Yerushalayim that sits and learns Yom and Valayla. He is a great Talmud Chacham. He is a member of the Beis Din HaGadol. And let's go, both of us, you present your case and I'll present my case. And let him paskin for us. Am I off the wall? Or are you off the wall? Who is this fellow? His name is Yosef Sholem Elyashiv. You didn't hear of him, but if I say that he's an Adam Gadol, okay. So here it is. I had been by Rav Elyashiv in 1956. Can't tell you that story yet. That still remains. We're not going to see it. Sorry. Okay. Anyway, he says, yeah, okay, I'm ready to go with you. About 2-3 days after we arrive in Eretz, we get together, and boy, I had to remember how to get there. The first time that I had gone to Rav Yashiv's house then, of all things, it was during a civil defense exercise. And I had to get to his house because he was going to give me a bechina in Hilchus Issa V'Heta, Yoredeya, because I wanted, so I'm not telling you part of the story, I wanted smicha from Herzog. I knew of Herzog. And Rav Herzog told me you have to get a bechina from Rav Elyashiv. So to get to Rav Elyashiv's house, it's impossible. Anybody who was caught in the street was considered injured. They'd slap you on a stretcher, take you off to the hospital. That's all I need. I have to get there. But I'm going to tell them that I'm not injured. You are injured. Okay. So what am I going to do? So you know who came to my rescue? The little kids in Meir Sharon. They were running through the streets. They'd never had a ride in a car. So they're running through the streets. They grabbed the kids, dumped them into stretchers, into the ambulance for a ride to the hospital, and then they brought them back. Meanwhile, as they're grabbing kids off the street, you know, me, the big CIA agent, is making my way from house to house until I finally got to Rav Yashiv's house. I had to retrace my steps now. And the Rebbeinu Shlomo Geholfen also has got a chotis min hashamayim. We make it to Rav Yashiv. We come into the house. Now the story is very simple. We each say what we have to say. I'll tell you the truth. I can't remember a thing that this great Rosh Shiva friend said, because nothing made sense. And if something doesn't make sense, it doesn't stick in here. So I can't. Anyway, we both presented our case. We're finished. Nobody will believe a word. You can tell anybody you want, but they won't believe it. They'll say I'm lying. I'm not lying, guys. I'm not lying. Rav Yashiv turns in his chair to look at my Rosh Shiva friend. And he says to him, where were you for 19 years while we sat here right by the border can't go into the old city, can't go to the Kotel. Where were you when our lives were in grave danger over here? You were in America? You know how we felt? Do you know what the danger for us was? Do you know what it means being able to go to the Kotel? For us, it's a great simcha. Yom Yerushalayim. Reverend Yashiv. You hear that? That's the story. You won't hear it from anybody in the whole world. First time I've said it publicly. He went after my Rosh Yeshiva friend. He pashit made mincemeat out of him. He pashit wiped the floor with him. I had to scratch him off the floor to take him out of Reverend Yashiv's house. The story, that's the story. So there it is. He didn't mean that. I'm sure that's what the boys out there will say. I'm not worried about the boys. That's what I said. You know, you reach a certain age where, come on, give me a break, guys. Not going to make a difference to me. I want to come to the end of this year. The end of this year is, I gave you homework now. I gave you a number of things homework. Number one, what did I tell you? Wikipedia, Israel, agriculture. Number two, is Mikhtav Melio, third chelik, about page 352. You can also go to the Shari Tshuva L'Rabbeinu Yonah, Shar Shlishi, Sif 17. It's an awesome Sif. There's one more book. You know who Michael Oren is? Michael Oren is Israel's ambassador to the United States, for heaven's sakes. You're United States of America. I wonder, oh say, can you see? You tell. He's a historian. His history of the Six-Day War is a classic. Unparalleled work. It's called 6 Days of War. As a Musa Sefer, it's up there pretty close to Mesillas Yesharim. And all you have to read is 5 pages, 6 pages. I'm going to tell you a brief, 5-6 pages. Without it, I've said enough. He describes the first hour of the 6 Day War, Monday morning, June 5th, 1967. At 7:10, first Israeli planes began to take off from Chatzor. Minute after minute, from different air bases around the country, all sorts of Israeli planes, fighters, bombers, are taking off in formation. By 7:30, 200 Israeli planes near the entire Air Force are on their way. A whole world knows nothing. All the world knows is that Israel is being strangled to death. 200 planes are flying at 7:30 in the morning. The name of the game, as the commander said, was to make it to Egypt without being detected. Okay? They were detected. You know who detected them? Jordan. Jordan had a radar base that was built by our good friends, the British. It picked up Israeli planes on the attack. What did they do immediately? They were allies with Egypt. It was Jordan, Egypt, and Syria. All right? So they immediately begin to send first to the commander-in-chief of the Jordanian army the code word. Einab. Einab. Einab is grape. That was the code word for war. Einab. Einab. It's picked up in headquarters in Jordan. They immediately, seconds, they're sending it to Cairo. Einab. Einab. Grape. Schnapps. Wine. Einab. They don't, in Egypt, they don't get it. Why don't they get it in Egypt? Because they had changed the code the day before, but forgot to tell Jordan. Jordan has the wrong code word. Isn't that a coincidence? What great luck! Second, even if the Egyptians in Cairo would have picked up the message, the fellow in headquarters who picked up the message was not going to do anything about it, because the commander-in-chief of the Egyptian army had gone to sleep a few hours earlier and he gave strict instructions he's not to be woken. Larry, what a night to have a good night's sleep and get up in the morning, you understand? Well rested. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Another coincidence. The commander-in-chief of the Arab Egyptian forces in Sinai. There were 82 anti-aircraft batteries. There were 100,000 troops. There were thousands of tanks. All of Sinai was an armed camp. And he decides, punk, that morning, that he is going to inspect all of their forward positions. And he has somebody from Moskva is there, their big allies from Iraq, from Iran, and the two planes with the whole staff of the Egyptian army, and they're flying over Sinai. And he had given instructions between 7 and 8, not a single battery in all of Sinai is to shoot. He's afraid they'll shoot him down. What a coincidence. Just when 200 Israeli planes are flying through Sinai, they can't get the message from Jordan to Cairo. They can't shoot. They can't do anything. What wonderful coincidence! At 8 o'clock in the morning, Israeli planes are already over the airfields of Egypt. And he describes, it was a brilliantly clear morning. You could see everything. A half an hour later, by 8:30, half the Egyptian Air Force had been destroyed on the ground. Because there was another fascinating coincidence. Egypt was on different time. They were an hour different from Israel. So their Air Force planes had been up between 7 and 8, which was between 6 and 7 here in Eretz Israel. And at 8 o'clock their time, they had finished all of their investigating in the skies, had come back. They were having breakfast. As they are having breakfast, Israeli planes are making their way without anybody to stop them through 100,000 soldiers in the Sinai. And they destroyed the Egyptian Air Force by 10:30 that morning. General Hod, who was the commander of Israel's Air Force, turned to Yitzhak Rabin, who was the commander-in-chief of the army, and he says, the Egyptian Air Force is no more. Utterly destroyed. And the way they did it was unbelievable. The attack of every airfield, the first thing was 6 planes that went for the runway in groups of 2. 6 planes fly over the runway. The first 2 planes drop bombs at the end of the runway. The second 2 planes drop bombs at the middle of the runway. The last 2 planes drop bombs at the beginning of the runway. Within minutes of the attack,
There wasn't a runway left in Egypt that any plane that could try to take off could take off. There was no place to take off.
What a bunch of wonderful coincidences. If Raful, one of the commanders, says every mistake we made turned out for our benefit, every good thing that they did worked out for their detriment, heaven was with us all the way. When I read that chapter on the first hour of the war, it is such a powerful boost to one's emunah and bitachon. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is alive and well in Eretz Yisrael. He is standing by his people. He is doing nisim v'niflos for us every day. We don't even begin to know. I think we're going to see things happening in the course of the next few months. You think that the Rebbe Shem is not going to assist us to get this guy Ahmadinejad Yimach Shemay V'Zichrei out of the way? We're the only country in the world that is threatened with utter destruction. The only people in the world. A great Rashi in Yecheskel, where Yecheskel talks about Gog and Magog are going to come up against Eretz Yisrael. They're going to want to destroy the Jewish people here. Rashi, what an awesome Rashi. Put that on your list. Lamed Ches in Yecheskel, Lamed Ches Ches. The pasuk is gewaldig. But the Rashi, that's all we have time for now. Rashi says that the Rebbe Shem tells Gog and Magog, Hoyo lachem lo sima lev. You should have paid attention. Hamotziyam min hagoyim, the Rebbe Shem who brought Kansel out of the nations, lo yim sedeim biyetchem. He didn't bring them out over here so that they should be given over into your hands. What fools you are! We have a great Rebbe Shem. He is alive and well in Eretz Yisrael. He is doing nisim and nifloyos for his people, unparalleled and unmatched in all of history. The least that we owe him is to thank him. One of my ugliest beautiful words that I've said, fascinating, in Hallel, we say that there are two moods in Hallel. There's the mood of Hodu Hashem Ki Tov, and there's the mood, Min Hameitz HaKorosi Kor, from the straits of the depths I call to you, Rabbeinu Shlom. And then we have Zehayom, Asa Hashem, Nagilo V'Nismecho Bo. This is the day that the Rabbeinu Shlom made. Let us be happy on that day. What comes immediately afterwards? Ono Hashem Hoshiyono. Why did the mood switch? So you know, it's not that the mood switched. Klal Yisrael knows that even at the moment of our greatest joy, there's danger lurking out there. There's somebody gunning for us. So when we say Zahar Yom Os Hashem, Nagila V'Nisbechavo, we thank him for what he did for us. We immediately turn to him and say, Ono Hashem, Rebbeinu Shlom, save us. There's something else in those two psukim. The Rebbeinu Shlom is not interested in anybody turning to him saying, Ono Hashem Hoshiyana, if he hasn't had the basic decency to thank him first for what he did. If you say, Zehayom Os Hashem, Nagilo V'Nisbechabo, if you thank him for what he did, you thank him for Yerushalayim, you thank him for Eretz Yisrael, you thank him for all of his chasadim, then he's ready to listen to you when you cry out, Ono Hashem Hoshiyana. But if you shuffle around on Yom Yerushalayim like you lost your best friend, don't bother him with Ono Hashem Hoshiyana. I'm going to say with great, great kavanah, Zehayom Osa Adonai Nagila V'Nisbecha Bo. Chag Sameach.